Good morning, everyone. I call the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee meeting to order for Thursday, March 21st, 2024. There is a quorum present. Vice Chair Hewitt, would you like to move the minutes?
Madam Chair, so moved.
All right, is there any discussion to the March 19th minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the March 19th minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes of March 19th, 2024 are adopted. With us this morning, we have Chair Stevenson to discuss House File 2000. I will make a motion that House File 2000 be re-referred to the Taxes Committee. Chair Stevenson, I understand you have an A21 amendment. Would you like to get the bill in the order that you would wish?
Yes, Madam Chair, and I'm happy to either describe the amendment or describe it in what I'm describing the bill.
Well, I'll move the A21 be before us now, and if you'll please walk us through the amendment, that'd be great.
Absolutely, Madam Chair, and it is a sizable amendment that reflects a number of discussions that we've been having throughout the interim to improve the bill and move it forward. So starting at the beginning of the amendment, there are some technical changes, including adding a new definition for sports governing body, changing some of the effective dates, adjusting the fees that are charged. Starting on page 3, there's a significant change, which is the addition of daily fantasy sports into the bill. DFS, daily fantasy sports, is a gray market activity in Minnesota right now. It's happening all the time. It's not illegal, but it's not expressly sanctioned by the state. In other states that have legalized sports betting, at least one other state, the regulatory authority that was responsible for sports betting is attempting to eliminate daily fantasy sports as unlicensed sports betting. And so in discussing this with stakeholders, the thought was it would be better to have a actual regulatory structure around DFS to make clear to the regulator that this is permissible activity. It's not unlicensed sports betting. So that extends for several pages as we get through the rules around that and the licensing and the taxation, getting all the way to page 22 of the amendment where we make some changes to the distribution of funding. The bill has always had money in it for amateur sports. We wanted to clarify that that also could be for non-athletic competitive youth activities. Previously, all the money went through the Amateur Sports Commission for these youth sports. The Amateur Sports Commission doesn't really do anything with non-athletic youth activities, and so we added the State High School League to handle the money that would go to non-athletic competitive activities. The focus on areas experiencing high levels of juvenile crime remains for both. Starting on page 25, we have a few provisions related to charitable gaming. This is the result of some pretty great conversations between Allied Charities, the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association, and other stakeholders. So the big change here is an adjustment to charitable gaming tax rates in the future, phased in over several years, ultimately resulting in $40 million in annual tax relief for charitable gaming. This is a major change, and I'll just, even though it's a tax issue, I'll speak to it since this committee has jurisdiction of the Gambling Control Board. Under current law, the tax on charitable gaming is high enough that if you look at the proceeds after prizes are paid out, the state actually gets the most money out of charitable gaming, followed by the game developers, followed by the charities. When this is fully implemented, along with the changes that were made last year around taxes and capping developer fees, I think you'll see that flip. I think you'll see the charitable mission being the number one beneficiary of charitable gaming. And I think that that's a good thing and appropriate. We also authorize an electronic pull tab device dispenser. So if you've ever been to a bar or restaurant that has paper pull tabs and seen a paper pull tab vending machine, this is creating an analogous device to dispense electronic pull tabs. You would still need to go to a bar or booth to get your prize payouts, which is also the case, of course, for the paper pull tab dispensers. Also included in here is a provision that Representative Listlegard is carrying, which would allow members of the Commander's Task Force, the eight congressionally chartered veterans organizations, to use a portion of their charitable gambling revenue for capital improvement projects on their existing posts. Has to be an existing building, has to stay in the same square footage. But, you know, all across Minnesota, we're seeing posts close of American Legions and VFWs. And the cost of upkeep of these posts is a major reason for that. And it's devastating to a community when they lose their post. I can speak from experience. The Coon Rapids American Legion closed a couple years ago, and it was a sad day. So this will allow those very important groups to be able to preserve their existing structures. And that, along with some new appropriation language, is the amendment.
Thank you very much, Chair Stevenson. Members, do you have any questions about the amendment as described? All right, we'll go to Representative Harder first and then Representative Nadeau. Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Claiborne. Representative Stevenson, I just have a question. It's in regards to the charitable gambling. Why wasn't this group included at the beginning for conversation to include charitable gambling within this bill?
Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Harder. Well, the original bill was to legalize sports betting. It really had nothing to do with charitable gaming as it began. The conversations continued, and we're discussing a few other gambling-related issues. And by the way, if you'll permit me, after having answered that question, I do want to just note, I neglected to say there's also the establishment of a economic development account at the Racing Commission in the bill that's funded from the tax proceeds of charitable gaming.
Thank you, Chair.
Forgot to mention that. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. One more question. Representative Harder.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Claiborne. Okay, with the addition of the charitable gambling, will this restore everything that was lost last year to the charitable gambling for these organizations? I ask that because I'm a Lions member, and we do charitable gambling to raise funds for our community, along with other organizations too, fire department. So I wanted to know, will this amendment and what you're doing with the bill restore what was lost last year?
Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Harder. Well, as we discussed last year, the changes, there's a disagreement about how significant the changes were last year. Some folks, myself included, think that the effects of the changes from last year will be substantially more modest than other folks. So what I can tell you is to put these numbers in context. In the most recent report from the Gambling Control Board, we saw statewide about $120 million went to the charitable mission as a result of charitable gaming, okay? About statewide, again, the split between paper pull tabs and e-pull tabs is about 50-50. So we can say that from e-pull tabs, the charities derived about $60 million in money for the charitable mission. There was a tax cut that went into the place at the start of last fiscal year that is estimated to be worth $15 million, and this bill has $40 million in tax cuts in it. In addition, we capped developer fees at 25%, which they currently are as high as 31 or 32%. So even just looking at the tax cuts, the tax cuts alone between what we did last year and this year are worth nearly as much as the entirety of the money that came from e-pull tabs towards the charitable mission last year. And then we have the cap on developer fees on top of that. Taken together, this is a very good thing for local charities across the state financially, all in. They will be in a better financial position than they were before the bill last year.
Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Claiborne. That's all I have for right
Thank
now.
Thank you. Representative Nadeau.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
Good morning, Representative Stevenson. How are you today?
Questions through the chair, please.
Yeah. So my question has to do with delegation. In your amendment, we're discussing the amendment still, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. So in 7.8 to 7.12, that language is a little bit different than the language in the underlying bill and including additional powers. Can you talk about the differences in, and I think this has to do with fantasy. I think this is in the fantasy contest. It's a little bit different than the delegation and additional powers in the underlying bill. Can you explain the differences and why that is?
Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Doe, could you direct me to where in the underlying bill the language that you think is different where you're looking?
Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 8.4 to 8.6 in the second engrossment.
I'm sorry, would you repeat those numbers one more time?
Lines 8.4 to 8.6 in the second engrossment of the underlying.
So that's the delegation piece?
Yep, delegation.
Okay. Thank you very much. Chair Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to consult with House Research about this. The reason why the language is different is because it's in a different chapter of law, and so the reference to the commissioner and making it's more necessary in the amendment language to be more specific about who the delegation is to because it's in a different chapter of law. The delegation that starts on 8.4 is in a chapter of law which makes where there's more structure around that piece. So. It's not an intended different effect. It's just where things are in statute and a question of statutory interpretation.
Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, and just to be clear, so in 8.5 of the underlying bill, the director is still the director of alcohol and gambling enforcement, correct?
Chair Stevenson.
Yes.
Okay. And can you spend...
Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My apologies. Can you also talk a little bit about the... I can't get my head quite wrapped around the youth sports and their connection to this. As you know, there's a lot of organizations out there that and local government that do make significant contributions and programs for youth sports. Can you tell me... kind of why you want to add this at a state level. Can you just talk a little bit about that and about why you did it and why you put the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission kind of in charge of this?
Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Nadeau, when we originally drafted the bill 3 years ago and continuing today, Minnesota has been experiencing unacceptably high levels of juvenile crime. And the thought process was here we had a bill about sports betting and we were generating tax dollars from sports betting and investing in youth sports made sense both from a direct connection between the sports betting subject here and then youth sports, but also as an opportunity to be proactive in addressing the challenges we have with a juvenile crime. The best way to stop young people from getting into trouble is to get them doing something constructive. If they're doing something constructive, they don't have time or energy of doing something destructive. Not to mention youth sports brings a lot of benefits in terms of developing leadership and having mentorship and skill development and social developments. It's just an overall positive thing. I think a lot of members know I work as a prosecutor when the legislature's not in session. I remember talking to a police chief shortly after I was elected who said, you know, you really should invest in youth sports youth activities because either you're going to take care of them or I will. Right, and so that's the genesis for why I thought that was an important thing to dedicate revenue, and I thought there was a nexus between sports betting and youth sports, just in the general sports subject. As for the Amateur Sports Commission, in terms of trying to find an entity that has experiencing making grants and overseeing grants, and obviously has subject matter knowledge about. Youth sports and amateur sports, the Amateur Sports Commission makes a lot of sense. A lot of state funds already go through that commission and go out in grants. First thing comes to mind is the Mighty Ducks program, but I know they do other things as well.
Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I try not to draw that nexus between, you know, increased gambling and crime. I hope that's not the case. But the Amateur Sports Commission is really metro-based. And I know that the distribution is kind of on high rates of juvenile delinquency or whatever. I know that that's the focus. How can we ensure that other areas in the state are going to be eligible to get these dollars? Or is this really not focused on that? And I do have some experience with youth sports grants in Hennepin, and it's, you know, as you probably remember that that was part of the additional sales tax to pay for the ballpark. And so we've been investing in youth sports and in Hennepin for quite some time at a pretty significant level, leveraging lots and lots of really good programs and dollars. We've actually expanded that program to start paying down user fees for families that can't participate. So I think it's a really good program. I just want to make sure that there's the ability that areas outside of the metro can access these resources in an equal way.
Thank you, Representative Nadeau.
My question was how.
How?
Thank you.
Chair Stevenson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Nadeau. I would maybe respectfully disagree that the Amateur Sports Commission doesn't have a statewide focus. I think that when I was mentioning just a minute ago the Mighty Ducks program, I think that there are grants they've issued all around the state from that program, and I think they do other work that's all around the state. This is intended to be a statewide grant program, the amateur sports the money in here. And in other cases, we have adopted provisions that make sure that some of the money gets out of the metro, and I would not be opposed to including that here to make sure it has a statewide focus. And happy to have further conversations with folks about how we can make sure that program is most effectively distributed.
And there's still time between now and taxes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Stevenson, I appreciate that you're continuing to work on complex issues related all sports betting, but in particular, there's a $300 or $400 million industry with the horse racing industry, particularly close to my district in the South Metro, and then we also have a horse track in the North Metro. This last iteration continues to leave out the horse tracks in having licensing, but also last year, I believe there was about a $20 million set aside to help that industry be protected from the harm that the competition of sports betting would do to the sports track, or excuse me, the horse racing industry. This bill provides about $600,000 to the tracks. Why is there a big difference from $20 million to $600 to help the racetracks?
Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Kosnick, no bill I've carried has ever had $20 million for the tracks in it.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kosnick.
Representative Stevens, that was talk about in the negotiations of last year, so maybe it didn't exactly make it into a bill, kind of hit a dead wall maybe when we were talking about that and a sticking point. But you do recognize that there's a significant industry around horse racing and all the related agricultural businesses that go along with that. The $600,000 that you're proposing to the racetracks, why is that in there?
Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Kosnick, as we continue to have discussions, I mean, this bill has kind of continued to evolve as we have discussions with stakeholders, and it's getting a little broader and covering a broader set of gambling-related subjects. We've talked already about the inclusion of the charitable gaming. Now there's a discussion about the racetracks. There's also a piece in here around historic horse racing. I think that you're correct that we do have two tracks in Minnesota that are significant to those communities that have a lot of economic activity, and having an using a small portion of the funds generated from sports betting to support economic development at those two entities seems appropriate to me.
Okay, I just want to direct our conversation just a little bit. I know you just have arrived, so we're on the amendment and just the adoption of the amendment, and I want to make sure we have plenty of time to hear all the testifiers. So I'd like to move to lead Nash with your indulgence.
Well, maybe I'll just follow up, and then we'll
and then
save
we can move
later.
To a vote on the amendment, so we can hear from the testifiers.
Right. Sure.
Representative Kosnick.
Well, Representative Stevens, I appreciate that you are acknowledging that there is a connection to the racetracks with sports betting and casino gaming as well. There is, in the specifically in the South Metro, a lot of additional benefits to the casinos and the tribes based off of a day of horse racing. Also, the other entertainment venues in that area, Valley Fair and all that, a lot of other areas. I think there needs to be more work done to make sure that we do not imperil and diminish and eliminate a strong industry of the horse racing industry, the horse men and women, the migrant workers that enjoy working there. There's so much going on there at these horse tracks that I think we should do no harm to them and also help prop them up through this, because putting the other additional competition in other states has actually killed horse racing industry, and we need to be very, very careful and cautious that you don't kill the horse racing industry in Minnesota.
Chair Stevenson, any comment?
No, Madam Chair.
Members, we're going to move to, did you want to say something before we vote on the amendment?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Lead Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Stevenson, well, first let me ask with the Chair, the referral for this is where?
Taxes.
Taxes. Okay. Representative Stevenson and Madam Chair, I believe a good portion of this amendment is new, and I think it's because it was referred here, but it has not been heard in your committee. Is that correct?
Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, the bill has been heard in the Commerce Committee.
That was not my question, Madam Chair.
I'm sorry. You're asking about the amendment.
We're not going to have debate back and forth.
No, that was not the question, Madam Chair.
Please clarify the question.
So I addressed it to you. If we could now address that to the Chair.
Lee Nash, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Stevenson, the amendment has not been heard in Commerce. Is that correct?
Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, no, it has not been heard in Commerce.
Thank you. Lee Nash, follow up.
Then I will make the motion to refer it to...
We already have a motion on the table.
We'll deal with that later then, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much.
But I wanted to point out that the originating committee of jurisdiction is Commerce. A 30-some-odd page amendment ought to have a stop back in Commerce, because the members of the committee there certainly are accustomed to dealing with this and have, I think, the right to see this again. So we'll talk about that later, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Lead Nash. Any further discussion from the members on the A21?
Roll call.
A roll call has been requested. We will move to the vote on the adoption of the A21. Please take the roll.
Chair Cleavorn?
Aye.
Chair Cleavorn, aye. Vice Chair Hewitt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hewitt, aye. Lead Nash?
Nope.
Lead Nash, nay. Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Bonner, aye. Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Berg, aye. Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Freiberg, aye. Representative Hansen, excused. Representative Harder?
No.
Representative Harder, no. Representative Herr?
Aye.
Representative Herr, aye. Representative Joy?
No.
Representative Joy, no. Representative Kosnick? Representative Kosnick, no. Representative Nadeau?
Aye.
Representative Nadeau, aye. Representative Newton?
Aye.
Representative Newton, aye. The ayes are 8, nays 4, with 1 excused.
With 8 ayes, 4 nays, 1 excused, the motion prevails and the A21 is adopted. Now, to the underlying bill and to the testifiers. Would you like to move to testifiers? Okay. We will start with Christy Janigo, who will be followed by Maria Chermak. If you please come forward. I don't know if I should call you doctor or chair, so when you're ready, please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Greetings, Madam Chair and members. My name is Dr. Christy Janigo, and I'm a third-generation Army veteran. I'm the American Legion Department of Minnesota Legislative Chair, and I'm an assistant county veteran service officer for my day job, where I help some of the state's most vulnerable veterans find housing, navigate their involvement with the justice system, and access life-changing VA benefits compensation. First, I want to thank Representative Stevenson and his co-authors for working on this bill and for giving veteran service organizations a voice in this process. We support the amended version of the sports betting bill, HF 2000. Our more than 50,000 American Legion Department of Minnesota members agreed to prioritize advocating for these tax cuts above all the other things we want for the service member, military family, and veterans community, because we think this will have the biggest impact. It's difficult for me to fully describe how much this means to us. There are 537 American Legion posts throughout Minnesota, and 193 of them have charitable gambling operations. We use the funds to carry out our four pillars: Veterans Affairs and Rehabilitation, National Security, Children and Youth, and Americanism. This amendment includes a historic amount of tax cuts for charitable gambling, adding $40 million more to the approximately $15 million in tax cuts that you gave us last year with the tax omnibus bill. We say historic because we've never before seen these levels of tax cuts. Our state taxes have been higher than the amount of money we've been able to deploy to help our communities, and we believe what you're doing with this bill will reverse that to the benefit of all Minnesotans. And we also think the amendment to allow us to use more of our funds for building upkeeps will help save some of our buildings that are currently vulnerable and at risk of closing. Although most of us stopped wearing the uniform years ago, veterans have a deep-seated need to continue serving their communities. And last session's changes to the e-poll tabs had our people worried that mission would be compromised. That is why you likely received many emails, phone calls, voicemails, texts, and saw a flood of social media messages. The funds we donate pay for honor guards at burial ceremonies, outdoor recreation for disabled veterans, suicide prevention programs, and stopgap funding for homeless veterans. We donate to area schools programs to help housing and food insecure children. We support nonprofit human services organizations near our posts. We fund youth sports scholarships and equipment for local fire departments. We also fund local parades, fireworks displays, county fairs, fire equipment, school flags, marching band uniforms, football headsets, international sister city efforts, and wheelchair-friendly playground equipment. What I'm describing to you represents the best of America, and these traditions need to continue. Thank you again for hearing this bill today.
Thank you, Dr. Janigo. And I would like to also thank you and Chair Stevenson for working together to address my needs and my concerns about the expansion of this piece. But thank you so much for your cooperation with that. Next, we will have Maria Chermak, followed by Patrick Gibbs. And since we have another large bill coming up, I would ask that the testifiers keep their testimony to about 2 minutes, please. Welcome to the committee. When you're ready, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, I'm Maria Sermonak. I currently live in Lee Seward County, and yeah. Representative Brian Farr is my district representative, as well as Rich Draheim, the senator from the state of Minnesota. So I'm just here just to emphasize on the Midwakanton descendants. I've written letters and emails to this committee and to state Senate House representatives for years. You heard from me from phone calls, emails, letters, texts, social media, and feedback has been, you know, few. It's just, so I don't understand it. But so there was a letter sent to this committee, mm-hmm. and I'll just read the letter that I sent, because I was told just to, you know, read what and keep it brief. So it just says, you can find Midwakanton through the 1972 federal census. Okay, this and then our request is for the state is to right now is to get inclusion of children and grandchildren, free Indian education, health care, and home free loans. As of 2021, the enrollment regulations have not been approved by the Secretary of the Interior, and the Kapoja band and the Midwakanton descendants have not received their payment from the 1837 Treaty Judgment Fund. The state of Minnesota and Dakota must not and should not go forward on sport betting, not as it stands. This is something that's just been hidden under the rug for far too long. You know, these tribes that the person next to me is talking about, that he's making these contacts with to push the sport betting through, he's not getting the whole idea of what he's dealing with. They got some undone business. It's not only them, it's the government. The government has failed the Midwakan descendants. I could go on, but I know I'm limited, so you got my letter that I sent to the committee previously, and that's my message, and I gladly am happy to take any questions. Otherwise, thank you for your time.
I'm so thankful for your being here and for your raising your voice in this room. Thank you very much. Next, we'll have Patrick Gibbs, followed by Tracy Williams. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Chair Cleavorn, Vice Chair Hewitt, and members of the House State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee, thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today in support of HF 2000 and the A21 Amendment. And thank you to Representative Stevenson for your continued effort, judgment, and focus on this matter. My name is Pat Gibbs. I'm an attorney testifying on behalf of my client, the Coalition for Fantasy Sports. The Coalition is made up of members from leading, innovative fantasy sports platforms, Better, Prize Picks, and Underdog Fantasy. Together, we advocate for effective legislative policy that protects players, promotes innovation, and provides a fair landscape for industry competition in the fantasy sports space. HF 2000 will authorize and regulate sports wagering throughout Minnesota, allowing the state to implement strong consumer protections. And the A21 amendment will ensure that Minnesotans can also continue to safely play the fantasy sports contests that they know and love. Minnesotans are dedicated sports fans, and whether we're spending a summer afternoon at Target Field, filling out an office-wide March Madness bracket, which mine's about to get busted pretty soon here, or debating which Anthony Edwards dunk was the best, we love finding new ways to enjoy our favorite sports. And for many Minnesotans, fantasy sports contests are a pivotal part of being a fan. In fact, we have more fantasy sports players per capita than any other state in the country. The A21 amendment is a positive addition to this bill, making clear that Minnesotans can continue to play all the fantasy contest types they have enjoyed for years, and that the state has the authority to oversee them all. I urge you to vote in favor of progressing HF 2000 to its next committee stop. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak with you today, and I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Now we will have Tracy Wilson, followed by Andy Plato. Chair Stevenson, you move the chair. Welcome to the committee, and when you're ready, if you would please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair Cleavorn, and members of the State and Local Government Committee for having me today. My name is Tracy Wilson, and I'm the Chief Financial Officer for Running Aces. I was shocked when I read Representative Stevenson's amendment to the sports betting bill. The bill as drafted, including the amendment, if passed, would be devastating to the $500 million horse racing industry. We strongly oppose Representative Stevenson's sports betting bill and amendment. This bill is supposed to be about the legalization of sports betting, but in this amendment, the bill directly targets the Minnesota statute regulating parimutuel horse racing. The amendment language is restricting what is allowed under parimutuel horse racing. Representative Stevenson's sports betting bill and amendment will kill jobs, devastate Minnesota's horse racing industry, and reduce economic activity at non-racehorse-related industries across the state. The state of Minnesota should not be picking winners and losers. Polling has consistently shown that only 7 to 10% of Minnesotans support tribes-only sports betting licenses. Yet this bill gives tribal casinos exclusivity on sports betting for all time. Running Aces remains committed to finding a sports betting solution that is fair and works for the state's two racetracks. This bill will cost the racing industry millions in lost revenues while only contributing $650,000, a small amount, to purses. The horse racing industry in Minnesota would be badly damaged by this unfair amendment. In 1982, Minnesota voted for parimutuel horse racing. That was a constitutional amendment, and Minnesota said, yes, we want parimutuel betting. In 1985, Minnesota's first parimutuel horse racing track opened. Racetracks have offered sports betting on horse racing since 1985. Racetracks have taken millions of sports bets on horse racing over the past 39 years. Why would racetracks be excluded now? Racetracks employ thousands of employees and contribute over $500 million to the state's economy in the second largest business sector, agriculture. Representative Stevenson's amendment states that parametric betting shall not include betting on a race that has occurred in the past. It's destructive to a law that's already been passed and is in law. Respectfully, this is a completely unacceptable attack on the horse racing industry and its long-standing parimutuel betting system. In summary, we know that the horse racing industry in Minnesota would be eviscerated by this legislation that unfairly picks winners and losers. Hundreds of good-paying jobs and the well-being of the horse racing industry in Minnesota are on the line. I implore you to oppose Representative Stevenson's amendment. Thank you for your time. I will take any questions that you might have.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your being with us today and for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next, we have Andy Plato. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Andy Plato, and I serve as the Executive Director of the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association, or MIGA. On behalf of MIGA's 9 member tribes, thank you for your consideration of House File 2000, a bill to legalize sports wagering. Since the Murphy v. NCAA Supreme Court decision in 2018, MIGA tribes and their leaders have monitored the impact legal sports betting has had on existing gaming operations in other states. Most importantly, those operations run by tribal governments. The experiences and lessons learned elsewhere have helped MIGA tribes understand just how important the details and structure of legislation authorizing sports wagering are to existing gaming interests like tribal governments. MIGA tribal leaders continue to evaluate changes to the bill, including the A21 amendment added today. For the record, at least some of the policy changes included are of concern to MIGA tribes, but tribal leaders do ask for the committee's support of the bill as amended today. We would also like to thank Allied Charities, Minnesota Veterans Organizations, and of course, Representative Stevenson for good faith dialogue and wish to express our support for the charities tax relief now included. Gaming revenues provide the essential tax base tribes rely on to fund basic and essential government services for thousands of tribal members. And anytime the state changes the gaming landscape, tribes must carefully consider whether such proposals strengthen or in fact threaten tribal sovereignty and self-determination. MIGA, its members and representatives, again, thank Chair Stevenson, Chair Cleavorn, and the full committee for recognition that tribal gaming deserves to be protected and must be preserved. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate hearing from you. Is there anyone else in the public who wishes to testify on this legislation? Okay, seeing none, we'll move now to member questions on the bill as amended. Did you want to say anything? Representative Posnick.
Thank you. Just check my notes here. I appreciate the testimony from the woman from Running Aces. I think she said it best. But Representative Stevens and Madam Chair, could we talk about the historical horse racing and why that's being singled out here in this bill as opposed to, you know, betting is betting. You're proposing a bill that allows people to bet on a variety of different games, even in-game prop bets and that. Why is historical horse racing being singled out here when it's known to help the economic activity of the horse tracks in other states to keep them viable? And, you know, an amendment, the section Article 8 in your amendment pretty much decimates the horse race industry along with the rest of the bill. Why is historical horse racing pari-mutuel betting included in this and singled out?
Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Kosnick, first I think we need to be clear about what historic horse racing is, because it's a name that gives a misleading impression of what's going on. Historic horse racing are slot machines, and we should just be honest about that. What you do is you go up to a machine, you're able to bet on a horse but you don't know the race that is being run at this video console. So you bet on, you pick a horse, say, I want the number 4 horse, you put in your money, you bet on it, then the machine randomly picks a race among thousands that have happened before, displays it, and if your horse wins, you win money. That's what historic horse racing is. It is on a video console that looks just like a slot machine, because that's the intent. The intent is to have an experience like a slot machine. We don't have slot machines at the racetracks in Minnesota. That has been a fight that has happened at this legislature many, many times and has been consistently rejected, having slot machines at the tracks. The reason why we are clarifying, and I should also be clear, historic horse racing is not at the tracks now. This is not eliminating something that the tracks are currently doing. This is clarifying the law to make sure that it doesn't come to Minnesota, because we have made a policy choice in Minnesota to not have slot machines at the tracks. Other places, as your question indicates, have allowed it. The point is to not allow it here.
I'd like to just make a point of clarification. Is it a policy decision or a compact decision?
That's a policy decision.
Thank you very much. I just want to make sure we're all clear.
Yeah.
Thank you. No. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, and I appreciate the response. Entertainment wagering across the spectrum, if you think that's a good idea, which you do by authoring this bill in other areas, I don't think you should be singling out and prohibiting a very popular game that has proven to help horse racing in other states. Regardless of compact or policy, mm-hmm. You've included it in here, and it's detrimental to the horse racing industry. It's going to kill jobs in Scott County. It's going to kill jobs in Anoka County. Representative Stevenson, there was an op-ed article in the Star Tribune by Senator Marty talking about the overall impact of this proposal or any sports betting proposal and the increased addiction demands on public programs and all the other negative aspects of sports betting. He says that the negative parts don't outweigh any economic benefits in here, that it's a bad bet for Minnesota. How would you respond?
Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Kosnick, I share the concern about problem gaming. I think everyone should share a concern about problem gaming. It's a very serious issue. The vast majority of people can gamble without issue, but for a very small subset of people, it ruins lives. And I have seen it in my job as a prosecutor, and it's devastating. And the bill before you takes that problem seriously. Fundamentally, we should not be of the belief that just because sports betting is illegal in Minnesota, that it's not happening in Minnesota every day. It is very easy right now to place a wager on sports on your phone through unregulated overseas websites. It happens all the time. And when you don't take my word for it, go talk to practitioners who work in this space of problem gaming. I have, and they have told me that they see people all the time who are wagering on sports. And every time someone wagers on one of those offshore websites, there's no consumer protection, there's no guardrails, there's no oversight, there's no taxation, which means there's no money going from that to problem gaming education and treatment. All of that is contained in this bill. The right approach to this serious public health problem of problem gaming is to regulate and address it with appropriate resources, not to stick our head in the sand and pretend that if we just say it's illegal, it's not a problem. So that's the approach that the bill takes, and I think it's the right approach.
Thank you very much. Lead Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Stevenson, I appreciate the effort that you expended to take care of the folks like Dr. Janigo made reference to, because I listened to a lot of folks in town halls and as I would go to fire relief pancake breakfasts and others. So I do recognize that there has been a significant amount of effort. I am still opposed to the bill, and you're not surprised by that at all. And I was taken aback by the testimony from the CFO of Running Aces. If I'm correct, I believe they have about 600 jobs that they account for in Anoka County, which is your county. And her statement of picking winners and losers, I think, was really very telling, because I think that's what this amendment does, at least as it relates to the horse racing aspect. And that's not something that's ever sat well with me from a legislative perspective, is just sort of, I think the Latin term for you're a lawyer, due machina, the hand of God just suddenly comes out of the sky and decides that this will be the winner and this will be a loser. And I Anoka County, your county, 600 jobs will be greatly impacted. So I think that there is a problem with that. So not to belabor the point, because Madam Chair is looking at me thinking, dear God, when will he be quiet? So Madam Chair, I'm going to make a motion to amend the referral and have it go back to Commerce, because it is the first committee of origin, and there is so much in this amendment that has never been heard. The chair himself admitted that I think it would be reckless for us not to have that be the committee that this goes back to. So I would make that motion to amend the referral, and I would request a roll call on that motion.
A roll call has been requested, and I will say, as a member of the Commerce Committee, many, many, many of these issues were discussed in Commerce. The chair committed to make changes and to address those concerns, which are done in this amendment. So with that, I will
ask. Madam Chair,
yes?
Very briefly.
Yes.
Many, many still does not equate to the totality of this amendment.
And we'll take the vote. Please call the roll.
Chair Cleavorn?
No.
Chair Cleavorn, no. Vice Chair Hewitt?
No.
Vice Chair Hewitt, no. Lead Nash?
Aye.
Lead Nash, aye. Representative Bonner?
No.
Representative Bonner, no. Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Berg, no. Representative Freiberg?
No.
Representative Freiberg, no. Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Hansen, no. Representative Harder?
Aye.
Representative Harder, aye. Representative Herr?
No.
Representative Herr, no. Representative Joy?
Aye.
Representative Joy, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick, aye. Representative Nadeau?
Aye.
Representative Nadeau, aye. Representative Newton?
No.
Representative Newton, no. The ayes are 5, nays are 8.
With 5 ayes, 8 nays, the motion does not prevail, and the motion is not adopted. Now we will go on to closing remarks. To your bill, please.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, and I'll just note that I have a really good, I think, working relationship with, everyone who's on the Commerce Committee, but the minority lead on that committee. And I will just say that I will have conversations with Lita Driscoll about how we can make sure that the issues are addressed there. I obviously have a lot of respect for the Commerce Committee and its members. I appreciate the time and the discussion today. I think the bill took an important step forward with the amendment. I ask for a yes vote today.
Thank you very much. Lead Nash.
Madam Chair, I would request a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. And with that, please call the roll. I'll just restate the motion. The motion is to re-refer House File 2000 as amended to the Taxes Committee. And with that, we'll have the roll call.
Chair Cleavorn?
Aye.
Chair Cleavorn, aye. Vice Chair Hewitt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hewitt, aye. Lead Nash?
No.
Lead Nash, no. Representative Bonner? Representative Bonner, aye. Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Berg, aye. Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Freiberg, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Representative Hansen, aye. Representative Harder?
No.
Representative Harder, no. Representative Herr?
Aye.
Representative Herr, aye. Representative Joy?
No.
Representative Joy, no. Representative Koznick?
No.
Representative Koznick, no. Representative Nadeau?
No.
Representative Nadeau, no. Representative Newton?
Aye.
Representative Newton, aye. The ayes are 8, the nays are 5.
With a vote of 8 ayes, 5 nays, the motion prevails, and the bill, House File 2000, as amended, is re-referred to taxes. Next, we have Representative Hewitt, House File 4738. Representative Hewitt, is your motion for House File 4738 to be re-referred to Health, Finance, and Policy?
That is my motion, Madam Chair.
All right, the bill is before us. And members, this is a bill that's had a lot of work done on it, so it has an A4 amendment. I'm going to ask Representative Hewitt to just quickly talk about the A4 amendment, and then we're going to get the bill in the form that you would like. So if you'd speak to the A4 amendment is now before us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. The A4 amendment just simply amends the bill to, again, a drafting oversight on my part that was not intentional because EMS depends on its docs, but it puts it actually puts in deputy positions in this new agency, puts a medical director at a deputy position, which we can't function without the medical directors. It creates an ambulance service division so we can deal with operations and primary service oversight, and it also creates a provider's division that basically deals with individual licensing. It pretty much is organizing the department.
All right. Thank you very much for that explanation. And so I'm just going to go ahead and call the vote to have the amendment adopted. All those in favor of putting the A4 amendment on the bill. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
No.
The motion prevails and the A4 is adopted. Now to your bill, 4738, as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. This bill has been a lot of work. It started my first year in the legislature when I actually went out on my own. No one sponsored me, and I went and started talking to EMTs around the state and actually sitting in their kitchens, because I had to figure out what role does the state really play in EMS. Right now, it's an open market. That's the best way of putting it. Some cities are involved, some privates are involved, but basically it's ran by an open market. Makes sense. It's in a board. Then it kind of, I went back to leadership and I said, we really have a problem here. They appointed me to the board. The board meetings were interesting at best. We spent 4 hours just trying to look at a sticker on the back of an ambulance one afternoon. That's not a good use of anybody's time. And I do want to say something to all members. When you're appointed to a board, show up. That's so important. Show up. That's our job when we're appointed, because we are the oversight. And what happened to this board is really not cool at all in my case, because I don't blame the board members. I blame us more, because we did not do our oversight. And what's happening around the state? Well, the OLA report really goes after this board in a way that was just really unbelievable. We had the board not doing their functions that we thought they were doing. They didn't know to do them. And that's where it really got frustrating. The OLA went back and said the board's not practicing what they were empowered to do. So all these things together, what is the role of the state in EMS? The role of the state in EMS is from the time of call to the time somebody can actually function and do interventions on a patient that maybe isn't breathing or having a chest pain. That's what our role is. We're failing. We have reported exorbitant 90-minute responses around the state for that little function, and it's the most important function we have. It's public safety, and we're not doing a good job at it. Now, are these people behind me great people? They are. They're tired. They're exhausted. The OLA report points out to that the grants were not given out, and that was several years back. Well, now the pipeline's not full. We don't have EMTs or medics around the state. Companies are doing everything they can to hold this together. But the whistle never got blown to us. We also have a funding problem. You read in the letters, the person that opposes this today, everybody else went neutral on me, but the people that oppose this are greater Minnesota cities. Why I'm here talking about this bill today, because I did avoid this bill. I avoided it like I did not want to do this. But this is the only answer I can come up with that's going to give us control. Basically, the other thing that kind of put me over the bridge this year was the industry coming to us and asking for $120 million in unrestricted funds without a plan. And the question I always had for them is, well, how is this going to get ex-ambulance out the door? They couldn't answer me. We also came back to them and said, we have three or four of them asking us for payroll help right now. We, as a legislator, last year gave $300 million to public safety. Big money. How much of that went down to EMS to make sure you get response when you need it? Less than 1.5%. Less than that much. But yet, they're okay yelling at us because they can't make payroll. So this concerns me. It concerns me in one way or another. We're waiting for the federal government to come in and fund our EMS for us. Well, since I've been in EMS and I left it 10 years ago, that was the same discussion we were having then. The feds aren't coming in with the fire hose. We can keep hoping for it, but we can't. I do think the state's going to be writing checks. But we have to redesign the system. The first part of that is redesign the regulatory arm. This is no other regulatory arm does what this one does. It has commerce. It has public health. It has public safety. All over it, touches every area. It's not a simple barber board or a pharmacy board. This thing is everywhere. We need to put our hands on this. This is what we are. We need to partner with the people behind us and help them do their job instead of just putting them in a board and maybe seeing them every couple years. This is our job, our job. Madam Chair, I have a number of testifiers. I'd like to get to them now and then get to member discussion.
I have two listed.
That's it.
Okay, perfect. So we'll start with Michael Jutunen, if I said that properly. And well, I'll ask you to state it for the record then and begin your testimony.
Not a problem. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for taking the time to hear this today. My name is Michael Jutunen. I am the incoming president of the Minnesota Ambulance Association. I am here today to speak to House File 4738. The Minnesota Ambulance Association initially opposed this legislation. After some amendments to the proposal, our board of directors has now taken a position to be neutral on this bill. We look forward to having continued conversations with Representative Hewitt, and we hope to get to a position where we can fully support this legislation. We also want to thank Representative Hewitt for the continued open door to discuss this legislation with the ambulance industry. And with that, I will stand for any questions.
Thank you very much. And next, we will have Steve Coringer. Welcome, Chief, and when you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
Chair Clewarn and members of the committee, I'm Steve Coring. I'm the Fire Chief for the City of St. Louis Park, and today I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association. We appreciate the author, Representative Hewitt, and his counterpart in the other body, and their diligent efforts to craft House File 4738 to establish the Office of Emergency Medical Services. We further appreciate the recognition that changes to the current EMS regulatory system are necessary to provide meaningful oversight, any meaningful degree of local control, and a sustainable progress and innovation. As many of you are familiar with the 2022 report by the Office of the Legislative Auditor and subsequent updates that occurred in 23 and 24, which determined many profound findings. Among them, and I quote, the MSRB has been largely ineffective in its regulation and support of ambulance service in Minnesota, and the board has failed to provide sufficient oversight of the agency's activities. The MSRB board composition and unique responsibilities create risks for conflicts of interest, end quote. Now, while House File 4738 does not make changes, Minnesota State Chiefs Association has advocated for, and the OLA report called for, such as changes to the PSA licensure and oversight process, or enforcement of a set of established performance standards, and it doesn't make any it it does make a significant step towards that innovation. Representative Hewitt has taken fair input from stakeholders, adjusted as discussions progressed, and House File 4738 has improved greatly throughout this committee process. We look forward to continuing discussions with the authors and with the new office as it emerges to keep striving for a better EMS delivery system in Minnesota. The State Fire Chiefs Association appreciates the work that Representative Hewitt has done in traveling the state with the Legislative EMS Task Force to hear directly from Minnesotans. This crisis cannot be solved with one bill or even one session. We are grateful that the legislature is taking up this issue and encouraging members of this committee to continue to look to the recommendations of the OLA report on how to reimagine EMS delivery in this state and make lasting, meaningful changes to oversight, accountability, and innovation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Chief. We appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to testify on this legislation? Please come forward. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Cap O'Rourke. I'm representative of the Minnesota Association of Small Cities. First of all, we want to thank Representative Hewitt and his work on this. We have been working with other stakeholder groups to find both the monies and we are appreciative of his work to restructure the governance structure. With the A4 amendment, I have 2 points that I just want to point out. On lines 2.21 to 2.24, there are two local government representatives, which we have strongly been asking for, and we're happy to see them in here. It does look like on 2.23, one member is going to be representative of local government, and they're going to be from the 7-county metropolitan area. On 2.21, one member is representing local government, and there is no designation as to where they would be from. So theoretically, I don't think this is the intent, but theoretically, they could both be from the metro area. The one point that we would ask is that even in greater Minnesota, you tend to have two types of cities. And we have obviously large and small, but we have cities that are served by a private PSA, and then we have over 90-plus cities that operate their own PSA. So as we go forward, one piece of suggested advice is we would like to see an additional public. We'd like clarification that one member be from greater Minnesota. We would also like to see another member added from a local city that operates their own PSA so that we have someone that is doing that, not just a larger city from greater Minnesota. But we will continue to work with Representative Hewitt on this, and thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate the testimony and for you bringing that to the author's attention. I appreciate that. Okay, anyone else from the public? Seeing none, we'll move to member questions. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hewitt. I just want to say, you know, to the folks here in the audience, I know how important this work is. And I know that Representative Hewitt takes this work with an extremely deep passion, all right? And, you know, as I share a soft spot for our EMS, being a family member of the Bloomington Rescue Squad. And I will say this is among our most basic charges to protect public safety. And I understand that Representative Hewitt has worked with the stakeholders in great detail here. And it was not a light decision to go down this path. And I know this was hard for you, Representative Hewitt. But because it is so vital that we protect the public, that we make sure that our EMS remains intact, that the folks who are doing this incredible work every day can continue to do that work. I think this is a really important step to protect the public good. And so I just wanted to thank you, Representative Hewitt. I'm sorry that we have not done our job in keeping oversight here. I am sorry that we have not done enough to make sure that we are protecting EMS and its integrity. so that it continues into the world, well into the future for the public good. And so I just want to say thank you for all this work. I know it was not an easy decision, but I think it's the right decision. Thank you for your help.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. We have four members who have questions, but we're going to close this bill at 10 minutes till because we have one more bill. Okay. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just a few questions, and I'll keep them short. Chair Hewitt, you were a member of the EMS task force, I believe, right?
Yes, sir. Okay. Madam Chair, yes. Sure. And I was the chair of it. I'm not the chair of this committee. Thank you.
Right. Representative Joy.
Did you hear anything from the EMTs and the medics during those meetings if they wanted a new agency?
Vice Chair Hewitt.
Madam Chair, Representative Joy, no.
He did not. Okay.
Excuse me. Representative Joy. Madam Chair.
The fiscal note of $1,000, with $1,000, how do they certificate the license of EMTs and medics? How can they run an agency with $1,000? Is that unreasonable or no?
Vice Chair Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Joy. Great question. Remember, we're not creating a new department. We're reorganizing a current agency aboard. That's why that fiscal note is so low. The EMSRB is actually, we have a great director over there right now, and they're doing good work, but they need the freedom to do better work. And that's what this is about, and that's what the reorganization is about. This isn't creating a new department. That's why the fiscal note's so low. It's basically reorganizing the department, putting it in place. They're still going to be able to certify all those EMTs. In fact, thanks to you last year, last session, we gave them money to do that. So we're on the pathway of filling those pipelines, but we got to make sure we can be innovative and really get to where we need to do it. Your own area has response time issues. You have Fargo-Moorhead, I believe, is your ambulance service. And so I looked at those numbers, and we want to make it better for your citizens. That's what this is about. I got a great ambulance service in mine. They get there in 5 minutes. There's other questions in your area. So I want to make sure that if something happens at your house, people come, and that's what we're looking at. And EMTs don't go into the details. They're really simple, great people. They're not going to tell me how to do this. They consider this my job, and that's what I'm doing based on the OLA reports, based on what I heard. Thank you.
Representative Joy, a follow-up.
Does this bill not regulate EMRs?
Vice Chair Hewitt.
It does because it's under the auspice of the MSRB, would all be transferred to the new department.
Thank you, Madam.
All right. Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hewitt. Quick question. We added in the A4 today, we added an ambulance service divisions and a medical services division to the, since the last time I've seen this bill. Can you tell me why we added those? And also, just to make sure, once again, they're merely advisory to the new executive director position or director?
Vice Chair Hewitt.
Madam Chair, Representative Duell, great question. They aren't now advisories, they are now deputies, which was different probably than the last bill you saw. We realized that we made some drafting errors to elevate this. This is all about elevation. It's putting it on the governor's desk saying we need to deal with this today. That's what this is about, and that's what those divisions will be able to do. We'll move forward. During COVID, we saw errors that were made. If an EMS doctor would have been in the room, things wouldn't have been bad. And we would have been able to advise the governor, and that's who has to be here. Some board over sitting someplace on University Avenue can't do that for the governor. This division will. So that's a great question and a great point out that these are deputies that will report to the executive director and get to the governor's office. That's what this is about. We work in an incident command system. This board is not incident command. If you know what incident command is, there's always a chief, and everybody behind me knows that someone's got to make the decisions. You can't go to a board that meets every two months, and make decisions. These decisions need to be made rapidly. Thank you, though, for bringing that question.
Representative Nadeau, follow-up.
Madam Chair, Representative Hewitt. So the Labor and Emergency Medical Service Providers Advisory Council that was added in the amendment, and that was that added to increase the amount of recommendations that could come to those deputies and the director?
Vice Chair Hewitt.
Madam Chair, Representative Doe, that division there is dealing with professional licenses, such as our post board, yep, such as our other boards that actual professional licensing. This again has so many arms. It has a ambulance license, that ambulances of services, and then it ambulances individuals. Individuals need this attention. This board, if it was in place before, would have been able to identify that, hey, we have a shortage here. Legislators, we got to get some more people. We got to do some grants or something because we don't have people. We don't have the bandwidth currently to do that, and so here we are. And that's what that division was made, is they're going to deal just with the personal professional licenses, and they need it because their scope is changing based on their medical directors.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Madam Chair, I also...
Representative Njoy, I just want you to know this will be your last question. You have two more members who have questions.
I just want to thank you for working on this. I'm not there yet on this one. I still have, concerns with giving so much power my problem is there's funding. This issue that we have today in Greater Minnesota is about funding. It's about reimbursement rates. I think you and Representative Backer have worked really, really closely together on this, debating the six R's. I mean, I think his are recruitment, retrain, and reimbursement, and yours are right time, right place, right purpose. And I think that you're doing really good work trying to get there. And I hope that along with the ambulance people that have went from opposition to neutral, I hope I can get there too. So thank you for working on this.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure that I had I didn't really have a specific question. I had a long conversation with a constituent that is a physician in my district and works with the EMS. And there was a lot of concern your first hearing out of the gate like a week or so ago. Tons of opposition. It was not a good hearing. We're continuing to push kind of a top-down model here with a EMS czars, adding some more.
Excuse me, we're not using the word czar.
Why not?
Please continue on.
Grand poobah, what? The point is you're creating more bureaucracy, and I'm not sure that we're addressing the retention, the recruitment, and the reimbursement rates. And with my constituent, as we talked through this proposal, I think it would be helpful to add more physician input. We're talking about a lot of other areas that have probably more of a business economic driver to what they're doing, where the physicians are there to actually help provide good health services, and that's lacking in here. Thank you.
I would like to respond to that, Madam Chair.
Vice Chair Hewitt.
Kosnick, that was the division that we added, was the physician input. Again, we told them right away that was a drafting error. We know this industry does not function without its medical directors. So you might have talked to him before that was done. The physicians actually are in a neutral, possibly supportive role of this now. They know it's, and please don't use the word czar. This whole system works on incident command. I'm not expecting you to know what that even means. But the truth is, that's what I grew up in, incident command. And it really has somebody that's in charge. And that's what this is. We need someone to take charge. Somebody that can go into the governor's office and say, we need this today. And those physicians will be able to have that access. Right now, they don't, because they're buried in a board on University Avenue somewhere. We have to continue to support this. And by the way, you have a great EMS system because I'm part of that one.
I just want to make sure that we're very clear not to use personalities or to use any kind of name calling in this committee or an insinuation of anyone's capacity in this committee. Representative Kosnick, did you have a follow-up?
No, ma'am. I'll talk to the operator.
Thank you very much. Lead Nash.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hewitt, I looked at your bill and I spent some time on the phone with some people who are very important to Carver County. So both Representative Harder and I have some ideas here on this. And you know the Carver County system. You mentioned that you saw it. Spent time talking to the CEO of Ridgeview Medical, who has a very revolutionary way of doing their ambulance services. They always have an ambulance on the road, and what they are doing is not only are they available for service for a call like you might have gone on, but they are also doing things like post-operative follow-up to make sure that there aren't returns back to the hospital. And I know this because I served on the board of Ridgeview Medical for a number of years. And these are the words that I was given, so these are not my words, but they did use the word czar. And Madam Chair, they're not my words. They were used in reference to this, that having a czar...
Lead Nash, I told overcome you yesterday
this. Madam
I am not going to tolerate that word Madam in our Chair. Committee. I said it yesterday to you privately.
Madam Chair.
Please move forward.
Well, regardless of whether it's my word or their word, that is the perception, and it is their fear that that level of control is going to adversely impact how they do their job, and that what will happen as a result of it, Madam Chair, is that there will be centralized control of how they do things, and they will not be able to exercise the freedom that they do today, that the way that they do their job will be taken away from this. Apparently I don't get to use the word czar, but the
one more time, and I'm cutting you off.
Oh,
that's it, right?
Well, Madam Chair, the centralized control by that particular person will impact how they do their jobs and will wind up costing the hospital, which is already having difficult times based on some things that have happened in the last year. I can't support this. This is moving incredibly fast. We should be focusing on what you can laugh all you want, Representative Hewitt, but it is moving incredibly fast. And I don't believe that Ridgeview has had an opportunity to talk with you. So if you can make these wide sweeping changes in a very short period of time without talking to people who have a significant investment in this, they've got, I believe, 19 rigs that they are constantly trying to run. I'm over here. The clock is over there, yes. We have to do more deliberation than this. This is not something that has to be done as quickly as you're trying to get it done. And you nodded your agreement that you have not spoken to Ridgeview. How can we do that without having talked to all the vested stakeholders? So I will not be supporting your bill. I encourage others to not support your bill, and I will do my level best to make sure this does not pass into law.
Madam Chair, I would like to respond. I can close because I think he just basically said what he wanted to say. But Representative Nash, you have what they call the community Paris medicine model. We know it because we did talk to your CEO yesterday. Actually, the person that the country is looking at was up here testifying, Chief Coring. That's what the model is based on. It's about prevention and moving people away from going to the ER all the time. It's amazing because, Representative Nash, you are right. We need to make sure that innovation happens in this state. Your CEO is right. We need to make sure we stay out of the way. And that's what this division will do. That's why medical directors came forward and said, we need to continue to make sure our medical directors have their autonomy. That's what we gave them. On top of it, we also... And I didn't, I'm going to make sure that I go back. I didn't talk to your CEO. Stakeholders talked to them after you said they're opposed to it. And so basically we went back and we've made sure that we are not doing anything to a great ambulance service like Waconia or any place else. We did do a lot of work on this. My whole career in the legislature has been devoted to this. And we need to make sure that we do this right. Yeah, it's going through maybe a little faster than... But everything goes too fast, I guess. So I really appreciate the committee's support, and I really appreciate the robust debate. But Minnesota can't wait any longer. We have people. I can't tell you for sure if there's going to be an ambulance leaving the garage in some of our cities tonight because of where we're at. We need to step to the plate. We need to get the job done and do it now, and they need our support. And, yes, there's going to be money. Revenue is being worked on. I'm going to Washington on my own dollar next week to go talk to our legislators out there to see what are we doing about this. The Sprint Medic model, read more about it. I know we got to get going, but the Sprint Medic model is exactly what we're talking about, Representative Nash. And so we need to be innovative. This will do that for it. The board doesn't. I ask you to vote yes on the board, and not the board, on the new agency, and let's move on.
Thank you. And Representative Hewitt, I'll just correct you in one statement that you made. This is not being rushed. You are in your sixth year, and you have been working on this for 6 years. So I will thank you for the dedication and support that you have to the EMS. And with that, members, we are going to vote for House File 4738 as amended to be re-referred to Health, Finance, and Policy. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and you are on your way to Health, Finance, and Policy. Thank you, Vice Chair Hewitt. Next, we will have House File 4904 with Representative Greenman. It is my understanding that you wish to have this bill laid over.
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. And I will move that House File 4904 be before the committee. And if you'd please talk to us, it has an A1 amendment, correct?
Yes, right. Madam Chair.
Let's get the bill in the order that you would like. All those in favor of the adoption of the A1, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The A1 is adopted, and House File 4904 is amended. Please to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I hope this is a simple bill, so we should have enough time. It allows statutory cities to adopt ward-based elections by ordinance submitted to the voters, or by if 15% of voters petition to put it on the ballot, and then it's passed on the ballot. This bill arose out of conversations with local jurisdictions as I've been working on the codifying and strengthening the protections of the Voting Rights Act into Minnesota law. As you may know, and if you've been in other committees, the Voting Rights Act exists to ensure that all voters are able to cast a ballot and participate equally in our democratic process. There are two main protections against vote denial and vote dilution that we're working on. And this bill addresses one of those. It addresses the issue of vote dilution. And in sum, what that means is if you have an election system that has the effect of impairing voters of color or language minority voters, if it impairs their equal opportunity to elect candidates their choice. This means that voters of color can cast the ballot, but their votes won't have equal power to elect the candidates. This can, as we have seen in the last 60 years, this can result either from at-large elections or districted elections that have unfair maps. And in systems of at-large elections, it will take racially polarized voting where minorities could be shut out of electing a candidate of their choice. That's where this bill came from. I've been working on this bill for a while, and one of the things as we were talking about it is in Minnesota, statutory cities actually can't take matters into their own hands and move to a ward election. State law is a barrier right now, and so what we're doing here, it's a simple bill, working with the statutes that it exists, allows a city council to go on the ballot and with both the boundaries and the question of moving toward elections if 15% of voters want to petition. This is permissive language. It doesn't require cities to do anything, but it does give them the authority, and it borrows the redistricting provisions currently in law for charter cities. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. We have one testifier listed for this bill, Alex Hassel with the League of Minnesota Cities. You'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Alex Hassel, and I'm here on behalf of the League of Minnesota Cities. The League does not have a formal position on this legislation, but we did want to provide some brief comments as this would be providing an authority for statutory cities that they didn't have before to bring a ballot question to their voters to establish a ward-based council. Statutory cities, which make up the majority of cities, are all comprised of at-large councils, and only charter cities have the ability to establish ward-based councils. And just for your awareness, there are 107 charter cities in Minnesota, 76 of which are ward-based city councils. Currently, unless a statutory city were to take the steps to become a full charter-based city, which is an extensive and lengthy process to change their governance structure, they would not be able to establish wards. There is a process in this bill that would allow 15% of electors voting at the last city election to bring this to voters as a whole as a ballot question. Currently, there's a process in which 15% of voters from the last election can petition district court to trigger the process to become a charter city. So we see this as fairly consistent with that statute, but again, would allow wards without establishing a full charter commission, which may be the preference of some cities. So I'll stop there and just thank Representative Greenman for working with us and hearing our feedback.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your being here, and always we appreciate your testimony. Anyone else from the public wishing to testify? We'll move to member questions. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Greenman, and I agree with this. You know, I'm a small city, and we don't have wards, but to give it back to local control is always in my favor, so thank you.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you. I appreciated the previous testimony explaining the 15%, that's apparently kind of consistent with some other I was wondering how you picked that. There is no simple bill. But just kind of in your testimony or support of what you're proposing here, suggesting that minorities may not feel like they have a voice, clarify for me how establishing a ward would do that.
Representative Friedman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Kosnick. And so in this, in federal voting rights law and what we want to codify into Minnesota law, if you have a system of an election, let's say you have an at-large election and you have racially polarized voting, so the majority of voters all vote for one candidate and a minority of voters always vote for another, right? It's not about party, it's about consistent over time, and when you look at these cases, they are usually look over 10 elections and sort of do statistical analysis. In those cases, what it means is you could be in a minority population or community that has 40% of the vote, but never can elect a candidate of their choice because they're elected at large. And so one of the ways that I think we've seen over time is moving to ward elections means that you have smaller, if you have five wards, that gives a smaller set of communities the ability to elect someone as opposed to requiring the entire city to all vote for those elected. So if that makes sense.
Yep.
This bill is being laid over. We have two more members with questions, and then I don't know if Lee Nash wants to close. So be very short, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greenman, I appreciate that response. It's helpful. I think where I struggle a little bit, and I understand your logic, but where I struggle, and I hear this from time and time again, is that the idea that all minorities are voting the same, and that could be, I take strong opposition to that. Not all minorities vote one way, and to insinuate that it just is wrong. We do not have myopic voting. We have different opinions. And we also live in a variety of different areas. I get it that in some cities they may be more concentrated, but I think I would be very, I proceed very cautiously to say that all minorities are voting the same way.
Representative Kosnick, Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for bringing this, Representative Greenman. I know the genesis of this bill is kind of addressing an issue in the Voting Rights Act and to make it consistent, but I just wanted to say, kind of even in the abstract, I think this is a good bill. I ran three times for the city council in Golden Valley, which is a statutory city which has at-large elections. Golden Valley is not a huge city, but that's just a lot of territory to cover. So I'd actually like to see us move more in this direction. So I think this is, even setting aside the issue with the Voting Rights Act, I think this is a good policy change that can bring elections closer and more localized to the people who know the issue the most, kind of consistent with what Representative Joy said. So thank you for doing this.
Thank you. Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Greenman. In line 1.10.
We have 1 minute remaining of committee time. Be really quick.
Well, I get it, but yeah. I don't think this bill is as simple as everybody says.
We're being late. It's being laid over, so you have plenty of time to discuss it.
Okay. 1.10. Where you add and ward boundary changes, is this, it doesn't appear to be optional. In the language it says the ordinance shall include a schedule of elections and terms and ward boundary changes, if applicable. So, go ahead.
Madam Chair, I don't think that's what that language is, but we actually adopted an amendment revise the process. So that's why I was confused by the language says a city may adopt an ordinance to elect its city council members by ward in the following circumstances.
And would you please state which lines you're referencing?
On the A1 amendment, which we adopted, it is lines 1.5, subdivision 7.
Yep, and I see that. Madam Chair.
Please, Representative Nadeau, and we are going to recess in just 1 minute.
I'll talk to Representative Greenman. Thank you, Madam
Chair. Thank you so much. Lead Nash, please.
Nothing further. You can just be done, and we don't have to recess.
Thank you very much. Representative Greenman, if you'll close up, and we'll just lay your bill over.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the conversation. I look forward to more conversations. Just to be clear, when something violates the Voting Rights Act, it is shown in statute. It's not assumptions about how people are voting. It's not in statute. It's shown by experts. But to Representative Freiberg's point, this is just a good law. Statutory cities who want to change their method of elections in order to be more representative shouldn't have to wait until they get sued or shouldn't have to become charter cities. This allows them to do that with a process that generally reflects state law. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Greenman, and I appreciate your expedience in getting through this bill. And thank you for making changes that make me more comfortable with it as well. I appreciate it. And with that, members, we are adjourned.